Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad that you are here wherever you are going on this spring afternoon. It is Friday, and as I always say, my kids say it's Fri-yay. And even, you know, I still laugh about this because I'm a nurse, and there is no sense of time for me, really, a lot of times, because I can work nights or weekends, or all of you people who are doing all of those jobs that require working on the weekends, Friday, it still has a different feel, I think. And I am really glad to see another weekend coming and time to go to church on Sunday. Sunday is my favorite day of the week. I love going to church with my family and just having a rest and a recharge. And so I hope that you are planning to do that too. Well, it is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I am answering your questions, and I will continue to do that today. I do want to make one announcement, or if you haven't heard, perhaps you have seen the news today, but it looks like Christian singer Mandisa has passed away. And we don't know the details around that, but just such a sadness. And she was such a light and provided such great songs and such great inspiration. And I definitely want to give my condolences to those who are grieving. And we may be talking about that a little bit more as more details come out, but just wanted to say that and acknowledge that as we, as a Christian community, grieve her passing. We are going to talk about some tough issues today, as we do, but from time to time, but I promise to try to be gentle with your hearts and gentle with our language here, because we don't want to be fearful. We want to be faithful as parents. And so I'll be talking a little bit more about Child Abuse Prevention Month, such an important topic for parents, not one that we want to talk about, but hey, as parents, we do a lot of things that we don't want to do. We do a lot of tasks that are unpleasant that we wish we didn't have to do, but that are so important as God has entrusted us for the care and keeping of our kids. So we'll talk about that. I want to start off today by reminding you that we have a challenge going on, 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting. Now, we started this back in January, and every week we have been talking about a new habit to integrate into your life. This is not something new that you have to add on. This is not something else that you have to do, but these are just things to incorporate into your life on what you're already doing. So let me give you a quick pop quiz and let's see how you're doing. Or if this is new to you, let's give you an introduction to what we've been working on here with our listeners in the show. So week one was prayer. We have memorizing scripture. We have plugging into a local church, listening to Christian music, and Mandisa is on my playlist today for sure. We have week five, practicing gratitude, also known as vitamin G, because of the known documented health benefits that come from gratitude. Week six, listen with your face. That is such a challenge. A lot of times we listen with our face in a phone. We're talking about listening with your whole face. We have talked about bedtime routines and sleep hygiene, which my teenage son has hilariously trolled me about, by the way. I have to share this really quickly. I went in to tell him goodnight the other night, and let me tell you, his bed was pristine. I mean, it would have made any hospital nurse, any military person so happy. And I kind of looked at him quizzically and he said, oh, I heard this radio show host talking about something called sleep hygiene and I thought I'd give it a try. So sleep hygiene. Week nine was daily devotional. Week 10, morning routine. Week 11, playing together because we need some fun in this world full of bad news. Week 12, affirmation, speaking words of affirmation. Week 13, writing those words of affirmation in a letter, handwriting. Week 14, family dinner. Last week, we talked about giving generously, which many of you did through Share-a-thon. And this week, are you ready? We are at week 16, believe it or not. And I'm talking about prioritizing your family time. That is the habit for this week. And it is so easy for us not to prioritize having time together as a family. And, you know, my husband and I, we have made lots and lots of mistakes. Our kids would gladly give you the list of things that we have not done well. But prioritizing family time is not one of those things. We have really worked hard to make sure that we have concentrated family time together. And if we haven't had any family time for the week, then they know they're not going to ask to go out with their friends or go to a friend's house or go to another event, because we're going to need to have some family time together. If we live together every day, we need time to play together, to have fun together, to talk about the things that are important. And so I just wanted to share some information from you that actually, ironically, is from the Harvard Business Review. Now, stick with me here. Don't get all skeptical. Let me share with you what they said about how working parents and busy parents can strategically prioritize their time. This was so interesting to me because we often talk about balancing act of, you know, managing either if you're working and you're parenting, or if you're homeschooling and you're parenting, and or if you're just busy, if you're just a busy stay-at-home parent, there are lots of things that we have to balance. But even the Harvard Business Review, the first thing that they talk about in looking at different types of work that we do at home is pastoral care. Now, this was fascinating to me, but basically how they define this is the intellectual and emotional engagement with your children. This is the most important work of parenting, is pastoral care. And maybe you haven't thought about it like that. Maybe you think pastoral care, you think of, you know, your pastor or your priest or your minister or your clergy, or maybe you even think of a pastoral scene where there's sheep laying in a pasture. But this intellectual and emotional engagement with our kids is our number one priority in having family time together. Then the other tasks that we do, again, looking at this framework that I'm reading to you from, is decision-making, deciding what's best for our kids, problem-solving, navigating trade-offs. And then the third thing is logistics, thinking about where do our kids need to go? What do they need to do? What activities do they need to go to? Have they done their homework? Have they brushed their teeth? All of those logistics. And then you have household support, all of those tasks that are required for running the household, cooking, cleaning, laundry, errands, all of those kinds of things. So let me review those really quick. We have pastoral care, we have decision making, we have logistics of parenting, and we have household support. Now, here's the important thing to know. Those first two things are where you should prioritize your family time. If you are spending time together, the majority should be giving pastoral care or engaging in decision making, talking through with your children out loud how you're making decisions about where to spend your time, where to spend your money, whether or not you're going to go to a social event. Our kids need to hear us engaged in those decision-making processes, and they need to be part of it because that's how we'll model it for them to learn. Now, if you're pressed for time, if your schedule is packed, if you are working two jobs to keep food on the table, those things that can be farmed out, those things that can be outsourced as parenting are the logistics and household support. So this may mean you get somebody else to help you. It may mean you hire a service if you have the means to do so. It may mean that your house is just messy for a little bit, but we cannot neglect intellectual and emotional engagement with our kids. Prioritizing pastoral care and decision-making has the greatest positive impact on parenting. It's most protective for kids, and it requires far less time. If you spend about an hour a day with your family, with your kids, and it doesn't have to be a whole solid hour, an hour collectively during the day, research shows that gives a lot of really great positive benefit to your family. And that's much more so than we think about how much time we spend on all the household support and logistics. And so trying to balance that is hard. But if you can just think to yourself, am I spending an hour a day with my family? Now, here's where I get into habit stacking, because maybe part of that is sitting down for family dinner. And maybe you're praying during your family dinner, and maybe you're having a devotional too. So those are 3-4 habits that you can stack together. And maybe if you're really fancy, you can play Christian music in the background. So look at this. I mean, we are getting to ninja level of habit stacking, but this is what your kids need in prioritizing that family time. It does not have to be something fancy. It doesn't have to be something expensive. It doesn't have to be something Instagram worthy. It needs to be something kind. So during this time together, when you are engaging in pastoral care, this is where you're communicating love to them. You're showing how to talk to them. You're listening with your face. You're supporting them. You're teaching them values. You're setting boundaries for that. And don't you just find it fascinating that, again, the Harvard Business Review is encouraging parents to engage in pastoral care? And parents, we have to take care of ourselves to make sure that we have the emotional energy and the headspace to connect with our kids. And that is, again, the highest priority. So really, if you're not, think about what are you doing in your life for pastoral care with your kids? Now, you may think, you know, my kids are older. Well, guess what? It's even more important to give them pastoral care. Even when they're grown, even when they're out of your house, are you calling them and asking about their day? Are you acting interested? Are you saying, what happened? How can I help support you? Can I help with you in anything? What's going on in your world? Here's flowers or a meal I'm dropping by just because. Here's some affection. I'm giving you words of praise. Hey, I think you're doing a great job in your new job and in starting your family. Those things can be so very important. And so I encourage you, when you're trying to balance your family time, to think about those elements of pastoral care. And either if you're really stretched for time, farm out the rest or just leave it for a little bit and make sure that you are prioritizing that. Your kids will benefit from that. Now, in talking about prioritizing family time and making sure that it shows through your calendar and your credit card that you are spending time with your family, that's a good measure of accountability. And even asking your kids, are we spending enough time together as a family? And what would you like to see us do together? They'll be surprisingly honest and tell you. But that is protective for kids. And we have been talking this month, as I told you at the top of the hour, about the fact that April is Abuse Prevention Month. And I am really excited, actually, to have my producer on with me. She's going to join me on mic, Stephanie Moses. Now, she is a longtime friend. We've been friends for forever, for longer than we will ever say, Stephanie, because we're getting to that age. But she has 20 years of experience in children's ministry. Now, if you listen to the show on Tuesday, I had my sister, Amber, on. So we talked about how to protect your kids when they're in your home, when they're in someone else's home. We talked about school and other places. But one place that I want to talk to Stephanie about is protecting your kids at church. Now, this may be something that we don't want to think about because we want our kids to be safe at church. And I do not want our listeners to think, oh my goodness, there is a predator under every rock or behind every pew or pulpit. We don't want to be fearful. We will be faithful. We'll be faith informed. But the truth of the matter is that predators do seek out church environments. They absolutely do. And this because there are people there who are trusting and who are going to trust people just more naturally with their kids. So when we come back from this break, I'm going to ask Stephanie some questions about what we can do to keep our kids safe. Because some of these statistics are that 1 out of 4 girls and 1 out of 6 boys will experience abuse before the age of 18. That's sexual abuse. The average convicted offender may have been between 50 and 150 victims. And the average abuser will go after their first victim by age 13 or 14. So we need to talk about what to do, how we can make sure that our kids are safe when they go into a ministry environment. So we will talk about that how to make sure that your church is safe, and how to talk to your children's ministry, your children's pastor about this, and what you can do as a great volunteer. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Stephanie. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to this Friday. So glad it's Friday, and it is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and we've been talking about your questions for the week and the healthy habit, and getting so many questions about abuse. This is something that terrifies the hearts of parents, and I'll give a disclaimer here. If you have little ears, I know we've talked about several things this week, but these are just such important things, and we have been a while before since we've talked about really important critical issues, but we will be talking about some issues of abuse, and this is happening, and I am getting a lot of questions like, how do we not be afraid? And I think ultimately we have to remember that God holds our children. He is sovereign, and the greatest weapon that we have to protect them is praying for them every day, just praying for their protection. And so if you're not doing that, I encourage you to adopt that as number one habit of parenting, is to pray for your kids. But my producer, Stephanie Moses, she has more than 20 years of experience in children's ministry, and I know I've worked with her. My own children have been with her in ministry, and Stephanie, this is a real issue, I think, that you was concerning to you, and how did you address it, and what is your view on this?
Well, it is important, but first I want to say, I think every kid should be in church on Sunday. That would be my heart, even though you do hear horror stories. And a lot of what we hear is how churches didn't handle it the right way. But there are some really simple procedures that can be put in place that make a ministry environment not attractive to those that are looking to prey on kids. And we can go through as many of those as you want, but so much of this, and your church insurance policy, if you're a ministry leader, you know it has recommendations for this. But it's just to put in place a child protection policy. And I remember 20 years ago, running background checks seemed foreign to a lot of people. And I would explain to people, no, this is not just for a child's protection. It's for your protection, because we want parents to know that we've done our due diligence. But the reality is, a background check is only part of the plan, because it has to be comprehensive, because a background check only works if that person's been convicted of a crime. And I can assure you that if a person's been convicted of a crime, they're not going to willingly fill out a background check. It's a deterrent.
Yeah.
But there has to be some comprehensive things set in place.
Well, what do you suggest for parents who are wondering about this? Because, you know, we've got such a wide variety of churches. You've got really big churches who have a lot of resources and very formal programs in place just because of the volume of children that they have. And then you've got, you know, churches where everybody knows everybody and it's small, and maybe, you know, it's just like Grandma Millie who takes care of the babies. And we've got all of those. But I think an important thing for parents to know, what you have seen in your ministry position, position as a professional and what I've seen in my position as a professional is that, unfortunately, sometimes predators will seek out those smaller churches because there it can be easier to gain trust and to get known by the community. And it's really important not to give an adult in your child's life automatic trust just because you know them from church. They really have to earn that trust. But what are your suggestions for how to approach the children's minister about this? You and I were just talking about it, and you said not at 8:59 on Sunday morning.
That is correct.
Not a good time.
Yeah, and a children's ministry leader, a children's pastor, anyone that heads up a children's ministry, they want to hear from you. They want to know that you're concerned about the environment that your kids are in. But there's just a small reality check that 8:59, if service starts at 9, is probably not the best time, because you will feel possibly ignored and shoved aside. And that's because they are frantically checking every room to make sure that these policies and procedures are in place, to make sure that your kids are cared for. And I'm not saying they wouldn't stop and do it, but if you want their 100% undivided attention and you're getting ready to visit a new church, send an email, make a call, set up a time to visit with the children's ministry leader, and ask these questions. Ask what their policies are. You know, like I mentioned, your church insurance policies, they have great suggestions on how to write a child protection policy. But here's just a couple of things that I think are important. If you're a volunteer, that you should be a member, or at least known by the church for at least 6 months. It's kind of a red flag when somebody shows up on day one and says, "Hey, I'm here and I want to serve with kids."
Mm.
You know, even if you know that they're a teacher, if you know their integrity, give it some time. Let them kind of become a member of your church and your church family. It's also important to ask questions, ask for an application, ask about their previous ministry experience, ask for references, and actually call the references.
Mm-hmm.
And just find out what they know. That's part of ministry safe policies. Part of safe sanctuary policies that many churches use is that, yes, do call the references. And then it's important, I think, too, that they work alongside a trained volunteer within your ministry. That goes both ways. That kind of trains them on how you do things in your environment. And it also gives the trained volunteer the opportunity to observe, are they comfortable with kids? Sometimes I'll say this, just because a parent has kids doesn't mean that they need to be in kids ministry. You know, they may need the break. So this is a great time for grandparents and people that don't have kids at home to step in and volunteer. But here's, to me, one of the big ones, and that's have two adults in the room at all times. I know that a teacher at school has 22 kids in their class, sometimes more, sometimes less, all by themselves. But it's the same kids every day. They're in a routine. I challenge you to be in a class on a Sunday morning that has the same group of kids every week.
You may
have 8 kids every week, but they're going to be a different 8 kids. And each of those 8 kids has come from a different environment each morning. So you never know. Two adults is so important for so many reasons, preferably unrelated. That's another layer of protection.
That's for their protection, because, you know, if you have even, are you talking about like a husband wife couple?
Correct. Which happens. It's great to serve alongside your husband or your wife, but
it can look like, if there's an accusation, it can look like they're protecting each other.
Correct.
Yeah.
So
to protect them. Okay. These are great tips. What else, Stephanie?
Well, I will tell you, I think the most important thing that a church can do is just make sure that the rooms are visible. You know, Amber talked earlier in the week about an open door policy about going to school. And I think that kind of is tricky because you don't want just anyone walking in your room. But at the same time, you ought to have the ability to do that. But I think that can happen with just having the doors open, having a window in the door, half doors, just a way that if there's a leader in the hall, they can walk by and they can glance and they can see what's going on in the room. That's a protection for kids and for the volunteers. And I think that's one of the most important things that you can do.
That's great. And then let's talk about the younger babies, because, you know, you and I talked about this in developing policies for when you were actively being a children's minister, because there's some different policies that need to be in place for more vulnerable kids. Now, first, we'll talk about babies,
yes,
toddlers, kids who can't speak for themselves. I mean, obviously, if you have an elementary school, they can come home from church and they can tell you about something that happened. But what about babies and toddlers, nonverbal kids?
Well, typically, if they're nonverbal, babies and toddlers, there's going to be a need to change diapers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those policies are very important. One guideline you could use are your state licensing requirements for your childcare facilities. Those are written for not only health safety, but for prevention. And make sure that's not done in a private area. And there are some churches, I see this a lot in children's ministry forums, that actually don't change diapers at all. If a child has an issue or needs to have a diaper change or needs to go to the potty, they call the parent out of worship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apparently that would be, I think that'd be kind of hard if you were in church and had to leave a lot. So I think if you can have a policy in place that provides safety,
mm-hmm,
that is doable.
Mm-hmm.
But for some churches, they're just unable to do it. And mm-hmm, so they rely on calling parents, and that's the best practice for their church.
Or the flexibility to have the parent do that if they want to.
Correct.
You know? So
yes,
allowing that, because I think some policies may be the other way, like, no, you cannot. And anytime,
right,
we're keeping a parent out of there, how can we make sure that we're having an effective partnership? I think,
right,
that's really important.
Well, and of course, you know, this is the parent part of me thinks, well, hey, if my child didn't want to go today, they're going to have to go to the potty a lot, because then, you know, then
yeah,
I'm going to come.
Oh, but, right,
yes,
right. That's true.
Yes. So there is a balance, but
yeah,
just having those procedures in place. And if you have someone that is, especially if you're in a church that has paid workers, you know, that paid worker can be the person that does that, because they are really trained. They're the same people there every
mm-hmm
week, but that's not always possible.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that your leaders are trained. And those are questions you can ask if you're mm-hmm visiting a church. And then as they get older,
mm-hmm,
kids have to go to the restroom, right?
They do.
Well, we're not going to go with them. They have to have privacy, but we can monitor outside the doors.
Mm-hmm.
We can make sure there's no horseplay. You know, we're not naive to think that horseplay wouldn't happen in a bathroom.
Never.
Not with water and soap and paper towels and all of the fun things that,
right,
that you can find there. But, you know, just say, hey, is everything okay if they're in there a while? And just the other aspect of standing outside that door is you're watching who's going in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And you make sure that no one that's unsafe is going in that restroom. And then by the same token, adults really don't need to go in those restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the ability to have adult-only restrooms on a Sunday morning, that's the best practice, because it's uncomfortable for both.
I think you're bringing up an important point too, though, because there are probably, I'm sure there's teachers listening who think, yeah, we do this every day, but you made some really important distinctions where kids are going to school. It's the same restroom, the same class, the same teacher, and it's every day. It's Monday mm-hmm through Friday. And when they come to a church environment, it, you know, often is not the same leaders, or they may have leaders for a Sunday school or Bible study hour, and then they may have different leaders for a worship hour. They may have a different bathroom and different kids who are coming because they're not required to come.
Right.
So that introduces a lot more variables that can make it more challenging. And
yes,
I think those pieces of advice are really, really helpful. And what other advice do you have, Stephanie?
Well, one advice that I could give to parents is just talk to those leaders,
mm-hmm,
because so many times I think when you come to church, and I'll give an example, several years ago in our preschool area, we had a teacher who was looking through a backpack, and they opened it up and there was an EpiPen in there.
Oh, yeah.
No explanation, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frightening for a teacher.
Sure.
And I think sometimes as parents, because I had a child that had to carry an EpiPen for a while,
mm-hmm,
and you want things to just be normal. You don't have to deal with it on Sunday. That's your time to worship. You want to get them there and not work You don't want to think about it. Like, mm-hmm. okay, now I've got to go through this whole litany of things that my kid needs. But those things can set your kid up for success or failure. So it's important to communicate with the teacher of what's going on at home. Mm-hmm. If there's things going on in your home like divorce or sickness, they're going to probably act out in the class at church. Mm-hmm. And a teacher can give so much more grace and can redirect things if they just have an understanding of what's going on. And that's especially important if your child has an individual education plan at school or mm-hmm. things that they need. Those leaders are there to help you. But if they don't know about it, they just think, wow, this kid's having a really rough day. What do I do? But set them up. Set them up for success. Let the teacher know what's going on.
Those are really great pieces of advice, because I think too that when you're thinking about setting them up for success, having a good positive experience at church, which is what we want them to have, because that is planting seeds in their heart that impacts their church view for their whole life. And if they look back at that experience and they know it's a place where they felt safe, where they felt nurtured, where they felt welcomed, that is going to serve them well. And so I feel like I need to stop and give the disclaimer, Stephanie, that if you're working in a church, even if you haven't received any training, and a child ever discloses abuse to you, you need to report that to the authorities. It's
Absolutely.
Not enough even just to report it to the children's ministry leader. You have an obligation to make sure that is reported to the authorities, because children may make an outcry of abuse. Maybe something that didn't even happen. We're not talking maybe their parents, maybe somebody else. We've talked a lot about that, but I think that's important. And I want to end on a positive note though, Stephanie. I want you to tell us about what are good things for a good kids ministry volunteer to do. How can we work to make sure that it is a safe space for kids?
I think just appreciate what they do. I don't know if you've never volunteered in kids ministry, it's not all goldfish and juice. Although those things happen
it's
important. Yeah, that's right. But if you think about your average kids ministry leader, they arrive early because there's always early arriving kids, and they leave late because there's always late pickups, right?
Yeah.
They have a different group of kids each week, and then they typically will start their lesson or activity over multiple times because they don't want anyone to feel left out. But people trickle in. You know, they may get there 20 minutes late. They monitor kids. They direct kids. They redirect kids and their interactions with others. I'd venture to say you probably break up a few spats. They plan so many things. They work so hard for your kids, and they do it because they love them and they want to invest in the next generation and them becoming Christians and just growing up with a biblical worldview. So just be sure to thank them for that.
And thank them for all the times that they get asked those questions, and then we have to say, that's a question to ask your mom and dad. Thank you so much for bringing
that. That's exactly right. That happens a lot in a kid's classroom at church.
We're going to need to have an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday where I ask you those questions. What are the darndest things that kids say in children's ministry?
They tell everything from your house, I promise.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about trauma dumping and how this relates to stories of abuse. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to this Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I answer listener questions and questions from my community, from my practice, all of the questions that you're asking. And I am hearing a lot of questions this week about protecting our kids from abuse. It is really hard. When we take a deep dive into this, it is tempting to want to just head for the hills and live off the grid and cut off our smartphones and have no internet and just go back to basically living like Little House on the Prairie. But that is not possible. That is not probable. It's not going to happen. We must face the threats that face our kids, and we must do so in a way that they see the confidence we have in our faith, that we don't know what the future holds, but we know who holds the future. That is not a cliche. That is a fundamental truth that we need to hold on to and convey to our kids. We need to be realistic about the threats they face and be protective of them. We need to be mama bears and, you know, fierce warriors and gatekeepers to protect our kids, but recognize that we cannot protect them from everything. So giving them some tools to protect themselves, having an offensive strategy, is really, really important. So to recap, some of the question, the most popular question that I've been getting, the most common question is just, what do we do? How do I not live in fear? Well, the answer to that, we've already said, you pray. And then three things that we have been covering throughout different shows on this week. First, realize that any child is vulnerable to abuse. It is important to be vigilant and not let your guard down. And I hope you were listening as Stephanie shared some great safeguards for church, because that is something we're seeing in the news. We're seeing a lot of stories about. I shared about the Nickelodeon documentary that I watched, Quiet on Set, that talked about one of the predators who was grooming kids not only on the television set, but at his local church were the allegations. And sadly, this is not uncommon. So as I said before, don't allow someone to have automatic trust. Don't give someone trust because of their position. You don't trust someone with your child because they're a pastor or they're a teacher. There, of course, is some level of trust that you have, but they have to earn that trust to have the safety of your child in mind. And it's the same with anyone, recognizing that any child can be groomed. And these are situations, again, where the predators do not appear scary and they don't have a big sign on their chest. They don't often give you, you know, weird vibes, although sometimes that can happen. But just realize that you have to be vigilant. And even though you think, oh, that wouldn't happen because I have these safeguards, just recognize it can happen. Number two, talking to your kids about healthy boundaries and their bodies, empowering them to say no, and tell an adult to invite them to always tell you anything. Say it over and over and over again. If they are not rolling their eyes and sighing every time you tell them, then you are not telling them enough that you can always tell me anything. No matter what, no matter who tells you not to say anything. And you know, I'll just do a little sidebar here. I had this conversation with my children when they were in youth group, and there was a rule that, hey, what happens in small group stays in small group. And so as I was driving a group of teens home with my daughter was there, my daughter started to tell me about something that happened in small group. Now, she did this because we always talk about anything, and she knows that I am a safe place for her. Well, one of the other kids started chastising her and saying, you shouldn't be saying that. You're violating the trust of our group, and you shouldn't tell your mom what happened. And you know what? I pulled over the car into the parking lot. I just stopped right there. And I said, this is important. I want to make sure that you know that I'm giving you my full attention and that I'm listening with my face and that I'm not just saying this offhand. You can always tell your mother anything. It is okay to tell your parents anything that happens anywhere. That is okay. Because a lot of these things that kids will disclose, especially in teen youth group settings, are not things that you are equipped to deal with. In fact, they can be things that are dangerous, things that can threaten their life, and you just may not know how to process it. It also may hurt you or scare you, and you don't know how to talk about it. So I want you to know it's always okay to tell your mom or tell your parent, tell your caregiver anything. That is very different than gossiping or saying something to hurt someone. And I shared a scripture from Ephesians 4, 28 and 29, where we talk about be kind and tenderhearted towards one another. But then verse 29 goes out to say, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful and building others up according to their needs. So is this helpful? You think about telling your parent, what is your motivation in telling your parent? It should not be to gossip. It should be to process a difficult situation. And I did go have a conversation with the youth minister about it to talk about specific boundaries about that. Because one thing that a child did disclose was something that absolutely needed to be reported to the parent. And sometimes when we have youth workers, then they may be young, they may be in college, they may not have had a lot of life experience, they may not have had training to know how to handle those situations. And so that is really important. So thank you very much. This is my TED Talk. Thank you for coming to it. But that is really important. That third thing, believe them when they tell you something feels off. Honor that voice of discomfort. Do whatever you need to do to enact boundaries to make sure they feel safe. Now, this again has to be balanced because we don't want to accuse every adult of, you know, being scary. But when they say that, let them see that you are following up on that, that you are investigating that, that you are going to talk to another adult about it, to ask questions, to make sure that you're setting boundaries. They need to go hear you say, you know, I need you to to sit in a separate room. I need you to make sure that there's another adult present when they're with my child or whatever it is. They need to see you protecting them, because if they tell you they don't feel safe, and then you diminish their voice and you say, oh, don't worry about that, and you don't take any action, you've sent them a message for what's going to be done. Now, sometimes parents, our kids don't understand the nuances of situation, and something that makes them uncomfortable, they may not understand that, and we can walk them through that. And a common example that I see in my everyday life is going for a medical appointment. They may say, is it okay? I didn't like the way that they looked at this. And sometimes we do see medical abuse. So talking about that and saying, here's what's okay, here's what's not okay. But it's always okay to say, hey, this does not feel okay to me. This is not okay with me. I need to talk this through with my parents or a trusted adult. And that brings me to the other thing that I want to talk to you about today, and that is trauma dumping. Now, this may be an unfamiliar concept to you, but as we're talking about Abuse Awareness Month, and as we see almost all teenagers are on social media. If you are one of those parents who is waiting until later, good for you. High five. That is good. It's not always the right thing for every kid, but it can happen. And as we see kids scrolling through through social media, they're seeing a lot of kids share their story of abuse, especially during this month of April and Abuse Awareness Month. And all of a sudden, a kid will watch a reel. And kids, other kids, are not often well prepared to craft their story in a way that is not traumatizing to other people. They may share this on social media, they may share this in person, but in social media, it's particularly dangerous because what happens is you watch one reel about abuse, and guess what the algorithm does? It's going to give you another one. And then it's going to give you another one. And then it's going to give you a more graphic one. And then more graphic and more explicit. And then they're curious and it's like a train wreck. They can't stop watching. Well, this is a phenomenon that is studied in research that is called trauma dumping. Now, trauma dumping happens when someone shares something bad that happened to them, basically without thinking about how it could impact the person who's listening. Whether that person is in person or it's someone online who is reading or listening to your story, and there's usually no permission to share. And here's the important thing for you to know as parents. There's not an easy way to opt out of the conversation. All of a sudden, they start telling you how they were abused and you just are deer in the headlights, like it feels rude to say, stop talking, I don't want to hear this. And so you just stand there and take the whole thing. Now, this is not the same thing. Trauma dumping is not the same as seeking needed support from loved ones. That is important. You need to have a trusted circle where you can process whatever you've experienced that's traumatic. If it's something as small as order anxiety, you know, as teenagers can feel, maybe they feel a little traumatized by going to have to speak to a person to order a drink or something like that, order their food. That is something they definitely need to get over. Or maybe it's something really, really severe, but you need someone to process that with. And there's also a difference in venting in a trusted relationship. But when we're talking about social media or acquaintances at school, and when you have trauma sharing, trauma dumping, this includes things like abuse and neglect and risky behaviors and sexual experiences and substance use and gender confusion and divorce and violence and I can't even tell you how many other negative experiences, and they can be very graphic and very explicit. Not too long ago, and the other thing you need to know is teens go to social media for other teens for advice on mental health, which causes me mental health struggles all on my own. But, you know, it's the giving tips for how to induce self-harm without actually harming yourselves. Or there are groups that are pro-Mia, which is pro-bulimia, or pro-Anna, which is pro-anorexia communities. And our kids can easily be sucked into these through trauma dumping. Now, sharing authentically, feeling accepted, feeling supported, that can be validating and healing. And being vulnerable and honest is empowering for the person sharing. And it makes the listener feel like, oh, you trust me and you feel safe enough to share with me, which can be appropriate in a situation where kids are sharing things with their parents or with a counselor or with a teacher or inappropriate boundaries. It can also decrease stigma and shame in realizing, hey, we're not alone in our struggles. And people who realize their trauma impacts, they absolutely need that safe space to make an outcry. But when we see trauma dumping, especially on social media, it makes the giver of that feel relieved, but it burdens the receiver. They may feel down, they may feel scared, they may feel conflicted, and they may even feel used. And then there is this whole, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. I'm going to share this in confidence with you. Listen, my kids will, anytime some kid says that to them, they will immediately say back, I need you to know that I tell my mom everything. So if this is something you feel like I can't tell my mom, you're going to have to not tell me because I am going to share it. And if it's something that is harming you or harming someone else, you should share it and we should share it with an adult. I have empowered my kids to say that from the time they were very, very little, and they have said that many times. And once they say it the first time, it breaks all of that fear because they're so afraid to say something. But once they've said it the first time, then they've established their identity as, oh, yep, she'll tell. She will tell. And so in a way, it has a protective effect because it protects your kids from other kids disclosing things to them they shouldn't be disclosing. And it also gives kids a safe space if they really are looking for an outcry. They can sometimes, I've had kids come to my kids and say, hey, I know you tell your mom anything. Can we talk to her about this? You want to be that parent. So here are some signs of unhealthy sharing that indicate a need for professional help to process trauma in a way that facilitates healing. So these are things you can talk to your kids about in a developmentally appropriate way, but especially teenagers, and even for yourself. So here's the first sign. Sharing deeply personal experiences with strangers or posting online for wide audiences. Did you know this is called sad fishing? We know about catfishing, but this is sad fishing, just looking for attention, looking for help. Number two, not asking permission to share or thinking about how the story will affect the listener. Number three, repeatedly sharing the same traumatic story with the same explicit graphic details. Number four, monopolizing conversation or times with friends that to the point that you're ghosted or left out if you're not participating in this trauma sharing. Now, here is a more important signs of healthy sharing. If there's equal sharing time between friends, if your talking focuses on the solution and not the trauma, if it isn't the focus of every conversation, if you're not sharing graphic, explicit details, but rather the emotions that came along with your experiences, and if you both leave the conversation feeling better, those are signs of healthy sharing. Now, how can we create healthy boundaries in sharing? Before you share with someone, teach your kids and say this yourself. Hey, I'd like to share a personal experience with you, but it's really intense. Would it be okay for me to share about this, or would this be too much for you? And if someone is sharing something traumatizing, say with confidence and compassion, I'm not comfortable with you sharing this experience. Let me help you connect to the right source of help. Well, that is our Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. We will see you next week. We've got a big week planned for you with a lot of great shows. And in the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. And we'll see you right here next time, where we'll prescribe more hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.